Blog Talk Radio.
Home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey everybody, we've got an exciting show for you tonight. I'm going to bring our co-host on, Mary Lou Monroe Ray. She is going to be interviewing Amanda Gore in just a little bit. Amanda's the leader of the Joy Project. We're so excited to have Amanda be part of the show. But in the meantime, Mary Lou, how are you?
I'm great, Garrett. How am I coming through?
You're coming through loud and clear.
That's good. Yeah. Oh, well, I'm so happy to be here and so excited to have Amanda with us. Amanda's just one of the amazing keynote speakers with over 30 years experience, I'm sure, for organizations and individuals all around the world, where she's just been this incredible dynamo of joy. And so many people have, she's just got CEOs eating out of her hand, literally. So it's going to be such a fantastic show today with all her tips about having a joyful life, how to be happier at work. She's just one of the best motivational speakers I've ever come across. And, you know, she's got plenty of videos on YouTube and many places where we'll be talking to her about, where we other people can reach her or book her in for an event. So I'm really looking forward to the show today.
I am too. And we've been having some fun trying to figure out technology behind the scenes while we wait for Amanda to get here. So I'll just ask you, since we are, you know, killing a little bit of time here, how are you connecting in? Are you connecting in only using your headset, or are you using your earbuds, a combination of both? What's working for you?
Yeah, I'm using a combination of both. I'm not sure what's going on there, Garrett. I did have somebody suggest something. And then Damien, who actually from Newbie Riders, who interviewed you in Sydney last year, he suggested a few things too. But I don't know my speaker, so I can hear you, but I've got it plugged into the speaker so we don't get any feedback. So as long as I can hear Amanda and I can hear you, we're good to go, and you can hear me, and hopefully you won't get all that from my mystery guest Skippy, the bush kangaroo, last time.
There we go. Well, I'll tell you what, it looks like we've got Amanda calling in already. So because,
lovely,
you know, she is such a spectacular superstar, I don't want to waste any more time. Amanda, welcome to Rated G Radio. Thank you for taking time out of your day. You're live with us.
Yay. Thank you for interviewing me, you guys.
Ah, pleasure, can Amanda. How are you?
I am very well, thank you, on this slightly chilly day on the Sunshine Coast, but, you know, it's about 20, so I can hardly complain.
It's a bit colder here in Brisbane, Amanda, but we are so happy that you have decided to choose this mission to join us today. And we're so happy that you did accept it. It's such a pleasure to have you. I have just been a fan of yours. I just laugh every time. You are my go-to when I need joy in my life and I want to really laugh out loud. I just love how you present.
So, Amanda, thank you.
I'm sure there are many, many people who would have to say the same thing, Amanda, because you've been, you know, a keynote presenter and speaker for over 30 years now to 500,000 people. I mean, the largest group size.
That's a lot, isn't it? It makes me feel very old.
No, but Amanda, that is one of the burning questions we will ask you today, is just how is your face going?
Oh, Mary Lou, you wouldn't believe it. It was so funny because someone came in today to buy some books, and up till now, so I've been on this new product, a natural product, because I only put natural stuff on or in my body. And for about, I think it's 45 or 46 days now. I started on May 30th. And until about a week ago, I had to say to people, can you see a difference in my face? And then they'd look and they'd go, oh, yes, I can. Well, the other day, we have a lovely lady who comes and helps us with cleaning. She's 77 and she used to look after my mum, so now we're helping her and she's helping us. And she walked up to me, and she's like my second mum, and she's got tears in her eyes and she's rubbing her hands together. And she looked at me and she said, "Amanda, can I ask you a question?" And I'm like, "Of course you can, Dot. Oh, yes, what is it? What can I do? How can I help?" And she said, "Is there something wrong with your face?" Because I hadn't told her what I was doing. And the poor thing, she thought I was having a slow stroke or I was getting Bell's palsy. So it's becoming more obvious.
Yes, I did. I saw the photo and I thought, now you've asked me to ask you about this. And I thought, what's going on with Amanda? Why would she want me to be asking about her face and her wrinkles? And then I looked on your page and went, oh my goodness, yes, I can understand why people would sort of go, oh, my goodness, what's going on? And it is such a huge difference. But I think a lot of it has to do with that beautiful joy as well.
Well, I would like to think it is, but that beautiful joy isn't affecting the other side of my face, I have to tell you.
No, I mean, it would just light you up. I went to a meditation.
I wish it would light up the other side a little more. Sorry about the delay, folks.
You'll have to catch it up so they can meet in the middle.
I know. I was thinking I'd do it for 3 months, but it's just a skincare range. There's a serum, a face cream, a night cream, a day cream, and a cleanser and a mask. But because they're using adult derived stem cell technology, so it's not actually stem cells, but it's the growth factors from the stem cells, I have to just apologize. I am a bit of a science geek. I love science.
Oh,
and
yes.
So I love the science behind these products. And because the growth factors are like the communication mechanisms that talk to the cells, I like to describe it as they're like little minions. You know the minions, don't you, in the movies?
Yes, yes.
And you know the one with the big eye and he's got that sort of goggle over his eye?
Well, yes.
He's like a growth factor and he goes in and looks around and goes, oh, my God, look at this skin. Oh, wow, we need collagen here. Collagen team, come on in. And then, look at these wrinkles. Wrinkle team, get in here. And then, ew, acne, quick. And so they look around and see what the skin needs, and then they start to give it to the skin and make the skin start to balance up. So I have to say what I'm most amazed at is the amount of collagen that's come back into my skin. So I'm videoing all of this on my YouTube channel, Amanda Gore TV, and I've got a playlist called Watch This Face. And I'm one of the, push up one side of my eye. Sorry, what was that, Mary Lou?
I love it. So what's the name of this amazing product that you're using, if you'd just like to share that with our listeners? Ladies, listen up.
Yeah, that's very kind of you. It's Jeunesse.
And I've heard of them.
To become a wholesale, or to get the wholesale prices, you can buy it retail, but, online. But to get the wholesale prices and save 40%, you need to go through a distributor. So I'd love it if anybody's listening wants to contact me about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there'll be lots of things, I think, today that people will want to contact you about, Amanda. But just to get started, well, as I was saying a little bit earlier, I went to a meditation group last night, and we girls love to giggle and have a good laugh sometimes. But I just remember talking about my life and where it's heading at the moment and how grateful I am and just the joy I feel and the amazing people I'm meeting, like yourself as well. We've talked, I know we've communicated before, but it's so lovely to hear your voice. And it just literally lit up my eyes and I could feel my heart opening up and my whole body was just, it just lit up. I was so happy. But when you explain things, it's, we're so blessed really here. And I think that is one of the key factors and for us to come back to that heart space, come back to feeling that joy in life. And you are just the advocate for joy. And you've started your own, you've got your book as well, The Joy in Your School, the Amanda Gore School of Joy. Would you just like to tell the listeners about your school and how long has that been going for now?
Well, we have an online program. It's just a nicer name for it than to go, oh, it's an online program, because that's so boring for most people. And in fact, we're revamping the online program because we based it on the book, obviously. The book's called Joy is an Inside Job. But, you know, you live and learn as you go along. And that was the first time I'd done an online program, and this was probably three, four years ago, before they were on every computer page you open. And so it's quite a long one. And we've had a few people go through all the secrets of joy, but it requires a bit of commitment. So now we're going to try and do another one. So stay tuned, folks. Just you can go to thejoyproject.com or amandagore.com and sign up for my newsletter. So when we have the new one all done, we'll be letting people know. And that one will be more videos of me and a little more interactive. But anybody who's tried to write an online learning program, you know, it's kind of like stabbing yourself in the eye with a pen, really.
Well, I'm sure that, but for people who want to change their lives, if they want to find more happiness in their work or just at home or within themselves, I mean, it really is a very worthwhile school of learning to. And you make it so much fun, and you're so positive. You send out about 25 emails, and it's got here that between 66 days and 250 days it takes to create a new behavioral habit. That's amazing, because you started off at Queensland Uni. You did a Bachelor of Physiotherapy, and then you majored in psychology. So no wonder you love science and the neurons and how it affects the body and our performance in everything that we do.
Well, I studied neurolinguistics too, and then group dynamics.
Okay. Yes.
And all of that ties in with the communication. But just to go back to that 61 days thing, Mary Lou, most people think it takes 21 to change a habit. Well, there's new science that says, it's 61. And most of us, to 200, most of us are living lives of habits and patterns ruled unconsciously by fear. So the background that I've had with all the physiological stuff from the physiotherapy and then stuff from the psychology, the neurolinguistics and the group dynamics makes it a really good blend and foundation for the 12 secrets of... And how I wrote, I don't know if you've got them there, but if you'd like to know how I'm...
Hang on.
Did I lose you?
Yeah, sorry. Just I'm having a little bit of trouble with my headset phone. I'm not sure why I can't get the sound to come through the speaker. So I've got these little earbuds in. So I'm just going to take my half of my ear off of my headset so I can actually keep closer to keeping my little earbud in there so I can hear you clearly. My apologies for that, Amanda. So as you were saying... what I loved,
it sounds like, hi there, Amanda, I can hear a little bit. It sounds like the cell phone connection might be fading in and out just a tiny little bit.
Okay.
Or the Skype connection. I think it's from your end because I'm getting Mary Lou loud and clear.
Okay.
I'm using phone because I thought it would be better. I'm getting tons of nothing else operating. So I don't know if the Skype can you hear me better now?
It's kind of like you're underwater just a tiny little bit.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that we...
Okay. Oh, okay. We can hold our breath.
Is that any better? Because I can...
That's a bit better, yes.
That's okay.
It's like we're looking for Nemo.
Well, how about I take the microphone out and we'll see if it's better with me just using my computer microphone.
Okay, that'd be wonderful, yeah. We'll try that. We'll try anything.
All right.
Or game.
Within reason.
Hopefully we can edit this. How's that? Can you hear me any better?
There we go.
That's better. Yeah, that's good.
Is it better?
It is better.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
We've had,
there you go. Well, we're a blue snowball would be much better, but obviously not.
That's okay. That's okay. As long as we still have you, Amanda, that's a wonderful thing. So getting back now to the Joy Project, and because you've written 5 books, you've certainly been a busy lady, and you've presented all around the world. You did a TED Talk up in Noosa. You've got this, your own channel. And I love a lot of the blogs that you have. There's about 43 pieces that you've written on LinkedIn where people can actually access a lot of the articles that you write. And the one that you wrote for Huffington Post on joy. And I love this 12 timeless secrets to creating a joyful life. So maybe you could explain a little bit about these beautiful pillars that you work through for creating a more joyful life.
I'd be glad to. So we're alive, aren't we?
Sorry, yes, yes, we are. We're alive. We're but that's okay. We have very patient people.
Right, and I'm really sorry for the computer issues. But let's start off. Sorry. So the book is called Joy is an Inside Job, and it's free.
Yes.
And 12 timeless secrets for everything you want in your life, basically. And the first secret is gratitude. And it's the foundational stepping stone for joy, because without gratitude, really, it's very difficult to have all the other things. And most of us focus on all the wrong things. There's a wonderful YouTube clip that Apple put out as an ad for the iPhone 6. It's called First World Problems. And it's well worth having a look at, because it makes you laugh at the stupid things that we choose to focus on when we're not conscious. And the problem is, of course, that we're only conscious about 5% of the time. And 95% of the time, we're being ruled by those fears that are driving the habits and patterns. So the overarching purpose of the book is to help us wake up, to become more conscious of how we're thinking and how we're operating. And so this is kind of like the introduction to the book. And probably the single most important thing, if you only have 5 minutes to listen, or if you want to take one thing away, pay attention to your thinking and what comes out of your mouth. Because
that's
your thinking is programming you. And because we're not, 95% of the time, we're not conscious of our thinking. And it, the metaphor that I use is when we're born, we're like a brand new computer. And that computer has an operating system of love and joy. And it's perfect. And unless, of course, you're a crack baby, then it's not so good. But most babies love and joy. And by the time we're 7, we now know that a child's brain waves are in, I think it's delta and theta waves patterns. And that's basically the same pattern as someone who's hypnotized. So from 0 to 7, we have absolutely no capacity to discern. If mummy's angry or daddy's upset because they haven't slept for 3 months because we've been crying all night, and one day they just happen to shout. Well, as babies and toddlers, we don't have the capacity to go, oh, poor mummy, daddy, I know you're exhausted because I haven't slept for 3 months, have I? No, they don't think that. They think, oh, mummy doesn't love me, daddy doesn't love me.
That's
and the bad news is that those apps, viruses, malware, and other people's programs go into us. So that by the time we're 7, that perfect environment of love and joy has been corrupted with all the other viruses, malware, and seriously, other people's programs, not our programs.
That's
but
right.
We're not conscious of those. No one talks about them in a context like that. And so we become adults. We're not even conscious.
That's right. I guess it's what you call the for what disease. For what? I love that.
Well, so what is fear of what others think?
That's
so
right.
All of those fears, those, and I hate to burst your bubble, everybody, but no one else is thinking about you ever, because they're so obsessed with thinking about themselves, they don't have time to think about you. And so discard that thought. And as I said earlier, we have to become aware of those thoughts and those fears that are ruling us, because then what they, those other people's programs and fears, cause us to focus on things that are wrong instead of focusing on things for which we need to be grateful.
Yes.
And so your first tip, the first secret, is go forth and become a good finder.
start to focus on everything that's going right in your life, even if it's only one tiny, weeny little thing. Focus on that one thing and become very, very conscious of what you're saying to yourself, because it matters. And it's even worse if you let it come out of your mouth. So when you say things like, oh, look, I'm a slow learner, or, oh, well, I've always, you know, I've never been able to grasp things quickly, or, oh, I'm shy, or, when you verbalize those things, it's like you're breathing life into the thought and you're making it a living form.
That's correct, yes. So, I've done a lot of work with that, and I work with a lot of people and teaching them how to change their languaging and their thought patterns, because it really does. We just send these commands to the brain and it will comply. And it will deliver in our experiences and in our behaviors. It'll just keep reinforcing those thoughts. It's a very powerful thing, and people need that awareness to be able to change that. So I guess that's what you mean by the term FARCT, F-A-R-C.
Well, Mary Lou, I don't know if you want me to go through the 12 or whether we'll just go through the things you've mentioned, because FARCing is spelled F-A-R-C, folks, keep breathing.
Yes. And when we say get farked, we just mean that.
Yeah, it's the neuroscience basis for change. And most people think that, oh, well, look, people don't change. Yes, they do. They change all the time. We can change in a heartbeat if we want to. That's the critical part, if we want to. And if you think about it, if you've been having a fight with somebody at home and you're shouting at each other and go, you suck, no, you suck more, no, you suck, and the doorbell goes and it's some friends dropping by, you walk to the doorbell, instantly you change and you come back inside, oh, darling, look who's here. So we can change anytime we like, whether we want to. And when we fart, it's like a four-step process to help your brain make the changes. And the first is, F is for focus. And we have to focus on what it is that we want to change, because as we just talked about, we can't change anything if we don't know we're doing it. We have to become conscious first. And then the A is awareness. So we have to become aware of the triggers that are driving the behaviors we want to change, or driving the thought and patterns and habits that we want to change. And very often those triggers are fears. And the most common three fears that people have as their core fears are I'm not worth loving, or I'm not good enough. A lot of men get I'm not good enough. The second one is I'm unsafe in some way. And the third is a fear of death, abandonment, or separation. So they're the core fears that most people die without ever tuning into them. So this is an opportunity for you today to start to explore, to see if these core deep fears are within you, because none of them are true, none of them.
That's right.
They're just other people's programs that you picked up from 0 to 7. And then once you become aware of the triggers, then we need to, F-A-R, repeat the new programs. So there's no point in just deleting something without replacing it with something else. And that's the way the brain works, it's constantly pruning. So use it or lose it is very true with the brain. The more you think a particular way, the more embedded it becomes and the more automatic it becomes. When you want to change it, I like to say you have to fark, unfark, and refark. So to change it, you have to catch yourself before you start on the old pattern and consciously stop it. And then you have to think in a different way so that you create a new neural pathway. And when you continually repeat the new pathway, it gets deeper and deeper until it becomes automatic. And the less and less you do the other one, the brain starts to think, oh, gee, we're not using that anymore. Oh, let's get rid of that. We'll just prune that. And so now you're left with the positive pathway. And the C stands for celebrate, because the brain loves to celebrate, preferably without large amounts of alcohol. But if you achieve something that you've been trying to achieve, then it's really important that you give yourself some kind of little recognition, acknowledgement, celebration, so that your brain gets a little hit of serotonin, which then reinforces the new neural loop that you've created. So in a nutshell, that's fun. And
it's very effective.
And we need to fart every day, really. And the whole book is, in essence, giving you different ways to fark. There are 12 chapters with seven, each chapter has seven daily activities, and they're just little easy things to do that help you create new neural pathways. And because there's 84 days in total, you get past that 61 day to set a new, I think it's actually 66, Mary Lou, I'm not sure. I think it's 66 to 100.
66 to 250 days she had,
And so it helps hold your hand as you go through a whole series of new neural pathways in the various 12 areas.
And that makes it, I think, a lot easier for people to have that support so that they keep motivated and they keep, you know, because they'll have times when they, you know, things will come up and they don't have the energy to do it, or they, you know, so you need that, they need that support and they need that interaction perhaps with other people. So obviously with your videos, which will be more interactive, and actually having a visual, not just reading something, but actually visually watching you as you present these things, will be amazing. People are more visual people and they absorb things better that way. Everybody's differently how they, you know, their brain fires or how they absorb information or to, in order to make those changes. So it's a wonderful thing.
And so the current program does have some videos in it, but the next one's going to be, I think, a lot more video-based. But you're right, people, 70% of the population are visual anyway. That's why YouTube's taken off, because if you want to know how to do something and you're given, excuse me, the choice between YouTube and a written document, 70% of people choose the YouTube because they can see it.
Yes, it certainly is a changing world as far as technology goes. I'm studying journalism at the moment, and, you know, they're sort of saying there's only a certain percentage of people that probably would pick up a newspaper, but if they tend to go online more to Google something or read something, and if they want to know more about that story, then they'll click and read further on whatever the written report is, or go and pick up a newspaper. Do you think that's changing with how things will be in presenting things? Like, do you, you know, with audiences, do you think that will ever change? Or people need that human contact, though?
I think that there'll always be a place for a live speaker, because you can create an energy in a room that you can't create through a video. And
that's right.
I don't know, and, you know, Buckminster Fuller said the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. So one of the things, I think this is one of the reasons I've managed to stay a successful speaker for so long, is that I studied group dynamics for 30 years, and I still do with Michael Grinder, michaelgrinder.com, for those of you who know. And he is spectacularly amazing at nonverbal communication. So in terms of having a group together, if you have an experiential speaker like me, someone who creates experiences, then you literally change the energy in the team and in the group. And whether it's a bunch of random strangers or whether it's everybody in your organization or the sales team or the, you know, admin team, it doesn't matter who they are. When you get them in front of somebody who understands the group dynamics, then they can actually shift the group. They can change the language that the group uses. They can change how people feel in the room. And that's a very different, and it's much more powerful. It's a very different dynamic from just sitting and watching a video online, no matter how dynamic the speaker is online. Like, I'm pretty lucky. I have put lots of clips of what I do up on YouTube, and I've had over 1.5 million hits now. And I think it's because I am very entertaining on purpose. It's natural for me, but I'm also doing it on purpose because people get into a coma if you deliver information and they don't have fun. And it's not a joyful experience.
And it is so important.
One of the core things to remember in leadership, you know, in my mind, a leader's job is to change people's behavior. So there's three components. One is to change people's behavior, which I believe you can do in a heartbeat if you tell them a story that touches their heart. And secondly, they need to create an environment in which people can be the best they can be, which is joy-filled and fear-free. And the third is to help people believe in themselves, because belief in your own ability is a better predictor of success than any level of skill. And yes. And that just came out of the conference I was recently at, where there was a man presenting all sorts of data from vast quantities of research to teachers. And what a student believes about the teacher dramatically impacts how well that student performs. So if the student's perception, absolutely, which really is what they believe, of the teacher is that I love my teacher, they're a great teacher, they're so smart, that student will perform far better than someone that sits back and goes, oh, my teacher's a jerk.
Oh, absolutely. So
beliefs are critical. And that's really another part that the book tries to do. It's by repetition and with a little bit of fun and fun exercises, it helps people to start to shift their perceptions. Because, of course, our thinking causes our perceptions, which then creates expectations, which then create reality.
Yes, yes, that's right. And so many people, sometimes they think if they set the bar too high, they'll never reach it, because they still have all this old languaging and this old programming and patterns that they've developed over the years that keep reinforcing, because it just tries to knock, the ego sometimes tries to knock it down. And then the self-belief and the self-esteem goes down. And, you know, I constantly in the work I do, I love telling people to believe in the gifts and the talents and the uniqueness that they have, and just finding your passion and loving what you do so that you're aligned in your own truth. But to understand what that is, we have to get to know ourselves. And, you know, that's why I think we interact with so many people in relationships, or whether it's, you know, in social gatherings, or whether it's with your schoolmates. You know, we all sort of mirror each other. And I don't like to say that people, you know, oh, if you don't like something in somebody, that means you don't like it in yourself. I think what we're here to mirror in each other is just what we need to love more of, and that maybe we're not really acknowledging all parts of ourselves. And people are there to show us that in behaviors. And, you know, we can push buttons sometimes in people, but if they're ready to change and they're willing to change, I think that's why those things tend to come up, because it's time to look at those things and to have the backup, like what you're doing with creating a joyful life. You've got a beautiful list here of gratitude, compassion, hope, reverence, generosity, forgiveness, which I think is a major key as well, energy and vitality, listening, laughter, love, cheerful enthusiasm, and inner peace. Even if you set it with a smile on your face and smiling with your eyes, you really do start to feel the change in your body. And I'm sure your brain would have to pick that up. All our little neurons in there in our body would be picking up.
It's very important. In fact, there's research on something called the Duchenne smile. So that when you smile, if you don't make your crow's feet smile, you know, crinkle up, then it affects your physiology big time. So that every time you do a fake smile, so you look at somebody, you're stupid if you think that nobody else notices. As soon as I say, if you do a fake smile, everybody knows instantly. And yet we'll do those fake smiles and we think nobody else notices. Well, they do. And what you want to do is look in a mirror sometime and be conscious of the crow's feet muscles around your eyes. Because when you smile, if you actually crinkle up your crow's feet, it stops you having little heart arrhythmias. When you do a fake smile, your body's really intelligent. Knows that you're making it a fake smile. And it reacts. And so physiologically, it gives you a little heart glitch. So when you're smiling, make sure it's a real smile, because your body's smart enough to pick up the difference. But of course, a real smile comes when you're talking to yourself and telling yourself a story of real joy or real appreciation for someone else. It when you're doing a fake smile, it's because you're looking at someone and you're thinking, you are so annoying. But you don't want to say that out loud because it would be rude, so you smile and look at them. But the problem is every nonverbal cue you give that person is basically saying to them, you're so annoying. They may not get the right words. They may not pick up, that person thinks I'm annoying, but they'll pick up, that person doesn't like me. And that's why the listening chapter is so critical, because most of us don't listen. Most of us wait for the gap in the other person's conversation so we can launch forth with what we've been preparing to say for the last 2 or 3 minutes while they've been talking.
Yes, so I've probably been very guilty of that myself. Sorry to interrupt there. And you become aware of it when you realize.
Well, when you point it out to somebody, but it's difficult to point it out to somebody because they get offended. But really, you have to challenge yourself. You have to wait till somebody else stops speaking, and you have to consciously say to yourself, be present, and ask yourself this question: what does this person really want from me? Because it isn't usually the words they're using. It's the feelings that the words wrap. These are all bits, or everything I'm saying are bits and pieces from the book as well. So if you want to find out more about it, you can get the ebook or the normal book. But words wrap feelings, always. And what most of us tend to do is to hear the words. First of all, most of us tend not to listen. But let's say we've gone past that phase and we actually listen and we hear the words. And then if we respond, excuse me, directly to those words, we may or may not satisfy the needs of the other person. But if you consciously focus on the feelings that those words are wrapping and you respond to the feelings, the person will feel truly heard. So listening is really about the other person feeling truly heard and understood.
Yes.
Very important.
It is very important. Actually, in a lot of native cultures, they have what they call the talking stick. And when you're sitting in circle, whoever holds that talking stick needs to be able to speak and speak from their heart. And when that person is finished, then others, if they have something they want to share or agree with, then it is when they hold the stick, then it's their time to talk. And everybody must learn to listen and sit in silence and really hear that person, because everybody's voice, you know, needs to be heard. And I think that's a lot of the problem we feel, you know, as I was growing up, you had to be quiet if you came into a room, or, I mean, there's good behavior, but I think sometimes we think we're not allowed to speak or use our voice, how we feel about things. Maybe we haven't had our feelings validated, so it's hard for us to express ourselves or to feel that we have the right to have an opinion at times. You know, everybody perceives things, I guess, the way they want to. We don't always have to agree with everything we hear, but we can certainly at least discuss things or express our preferences at times. And I think that's been a real challenge for many people, and being able to use their own voice and hearing their own voice within, or their song within, as I like to call it.
Well, I think that's where the love chapter comes in as well, because most people aren't aware of their feelings. We're not taught as grown-ups and parents to encourage feelings with children, and we don't see. One of the things I suggest people do is to sit around the table at night with their children and wear gratitude glasses. So you can either make a circle between your thumb and your index finger, or you can, we have gratitude glasses on our website, or you can just go to a dollar store and buy some funny heart-shaped glasses, preferably, and they're passed around the table. And every night you ask every child to say, what's something that you're grateful for today? What happened that you're grateful for? So you start to teach them about gratitude. And then you can do the same with compassion. And if you read a chapter in the book, my greatest hope is that it becomes every parent's manual. Because if the parents do what's in the book, they will end up with joyful, balanced children. And, you know, if they spend a month on gratitude to embed into the children what gratitude really means. Because most of the time we just look at kids and we go, say thank you to your brother. Say thank you to your brother. I said say thank you to your brother. And we think that's teaching them gratitude. Well, it's not. It's just forcing them to say thank you. But gratitude is so much more than that. And if we took a month on compassion and grace, well, you read the chapter And then around the table at night, you discuss the concepts and bring it into their school. You know, is there a child at school that's a bit of an outcast? And then talk to them about compassion and how it's about taking action to help someone else. And it's about being and having empathy. And empathy is one of the most critical life skills that we need. But when do we have a lesson on teaching empathy at school? We don't. So we have parents teach our children. And so sometimes the schools will be doing, there are some very good programs in schools now that help with that, but it's not the school's job. It's a parent's job to teach a child these qualities of love and compassion and reverence. And, for example, reverence. You know, no one talks about reverence, but we'll watch a toddler, a two-year-old, who has a cat, a lady beak on their hand, and you look at them and they're, oh, look at these. And look at this leaf. And when you're with a child, you tend to do that sort of thing. Say, oh, look at that beautiful colour. But as a grown-up, it's just, oh, well, that's nature. And unless there's something extraordinarily magnificent, like a magical sunset or an enormous canyon or something exquisite, we don't even notice it anymore. Nor do we have reverence, let alone we have reverence for it and treat it with reverence. Well, we need to teach treat people with reverence too. Every person we meet is an astonishing spiritual being. But as you were saying before, people don't really know that they have feelings half the time because they've suppressed them for so long. And that's where learning to love yourself and it's a lifelong journey for most people. It's very easy to say to someone, oh, well, gee, just love yourself, you know, just love yourself and treat yourself well. Well, every cell in your body for the last 25, 35, 45, 55, 65 years has been programmed with your thoughts, and the cells are programmed with your thoughts, that are not worth loving. So when somebody comes along and says to you, no, look, you know, you are worth loving. You just, like, just believe you're worth loving. Every other cell in their body is going, oh, pig's ass, you are not worth loving. You haven't been worth loving since you were 1.5 when XYZ happened to you. So it has to come from your own consciousness, and it has to come from exploring where that came from and recognizing that that was not the truth. For example, I was 58, I think, no, 53, when I discovered my father had sexually abused me when I was a child. And for all intents and purposes, my life is extraordinarily successful. And it is. I've done very well in my business. I've got a marriage. I'm married now. I've traveled the world. I've, you know, done lots and lots of great things. But there were patterns that kept coming up in my life, and primarily in relationships. And most of our relationships are our greatest spiritual teachers.
Yes.
And your partner, be very grateful, and I say this in the book, be very, very grateful to your partner, even if it's a difficult relationship, because they are your greatest spiritual teacher, should you choose to look at yourself. And so for me, that's the process that was the beginning of the journey to discover the three core fears. So for 53 years of my life, I had a deep-seated belief that I wasn't worth loving. And so for those of you out there, because there's 1 in 3 who are sexually abused these days, whatever happened to you as a child, it was not your fault. Listen That's hard right. to this. Listen carefully. Whatever happened to you as a child, it was not your fault. Because when we're little, we assume that everything is about us and it's our fault. An adult should not have done anything to you that was inappropriate. It was not your fault. So it took me a while to learn that. And in the chapter on inner peace, there's a part about Kathy, my friend, who said that to me. And that was the day I started to turn around. But it's been a journey. I'm 61 now, and I'm still wrestling to some degree with the core belief that I'm not worth loving, that I'm not good enough. So for those of you who are listening, you know, realize that you can't just snap your fingers. Well, I don't know anybody who's been able to snap their fingers and go from, oh, look, she's right. I've got this core belief I don't love myself. And the next day go, you know, I'm the best thing since sliced bread. It's a bit of a journey. So, you know, be prepared for that. If you've had an aha moment today and you're listening to this, and you think that you may have some of those fears, go explore it. And then believe by going through your past and recognizing that it wasn't your fault. And then you just have to go back to parking. So when you realize you're going into a pattern that's based on the belief that I'm not worth loving, you have to unfark, stop it, and refark with another thought that says, wait, I am worth loving. You know, I am a spiritual being. I'm an astonishing spiritual being, because that's who you are. You're not just a lump of protoplasm. A human being is an astonishing spiritual being encased in a temple.
It is. So, we are.
You're thinking mine's not a temple. Yes, it is, because if you don't have your body, then your spirit doesn't have anywhere to live. And I'm not sure. Have you ever read a book, Mary Lou, called The Butterfly and the Diving Bell and the Butterfly?
No, I haven't, Amanda. It sounds really interesting.
Well, it's an amazing book written by a French marketing executive who had a catastrophic brain event. And it's called locked-in syndrome, and it's quite common. But to all intents and purposes, people thought he was basically dead. His body was completely paralyzed, except for his eyelids. But inside his body was his spirit that could think. And it was exactly the same person, in inverted commas, as he was before. And it took some months before there was a woman who recognized that he was blinking his eyes in some form of pattern. And then they realized he was alive and well on the inside. It's just his body wasn't moving. And so together she sat with him, and she went through every letter of the alphabet with him blinking yes and no to create every word in that book. And it's called The Diving Bell and the Butterfly. And after you think that you are an astonishing spiritual being. Your spirit is very different from your body. And it's the thoughts and the patterns of thinking and our beliefs that get embedded by the thoughts and the stories we tell ourselves that control that our mind, which is, again, different from our spirit. So it's getting a bit complex now, sorry.
Yes, no, that's okay. I understand that fully. But for listeners who don't understand, it's a good way to begin to start to even look within themselves, because the psyche can only deal with so many layers at a time. I always sort of see it as the onion, and as you move through things and you work through these and change these patterns slowly, or work towards that, or certain thought behaviors that we have, so I'm not using the right words here, but you know, you can only take one layer at a time until you start to get down to the core, very core, and that can take a long time. And it's also about the willingness and whether people sometimes will allow that, because a lot of people don't want to have to go relive trauma and things like that, but not maybe so much.
They don't have to go and relive it. They just have to acknowledge that it happened and that it wasn't their fault.
Yes.
I don't know any of the details of mine. I just know it happened. And I've not
you don't need to
or anything.
No, because you don't need to relive all the pain. It's more about, okay, yes, that happened, but I'm here now in this present time. And I can change my life because I want to have a life full of joy. And that shouldn't be what other people have done to us or said to us or hurt us. Everybody's been hurt. That should actually, you know, stop you from really living a beautiful, joyful life. And that takes time and it takes a commitment. But it's one of the best ones is loving yourself and learning how to love yourself and loving the life that we've been given here. We've been so blessed on this beautiful planet, and we have these amazing elements around us, and we have these wonderful emotions to be able to feel, and our senses to feel and taste and touch and experience things in this physical world. So this beautiful spirit, you know, wants to be able to express itself in that essence. And, you know, I think joy is one of the greatest things to achieve. I went and watched that movie Inside Outside, which was absolutely delightful. I would recommend that movie to everyone. Exactly. It was so clever. And I love joy. And all those things are important to acknowledge.
Pregnant.
Yeah.
I love Sadness. Sadness is very cute. And if you haven't seen the movie, it's a really good one, because although they're just a small number of emotions that we, of the variety that we have, it's a wonderful way to show anybody, not just children, that we need all of them and balance them. But also it's, you know, try to not do this all by yourself, because it's a very challenging journey to do by yourself, because first of all, you're very often unaware of the beliefs that are and the fears that are ruling you. Although you, if you start to look at what we've talked about today and tune in, you may find that this gives you a lot of answers. But you need some help, and whether it's working your way through the book and the steps in there, or the online program, or whether it's reading other books, or whether it's talking to qualified counselors, or whether it's having some healing done, don't be too tough on yourself, because, or I should say, be gentle with yourself, because these are our life lessons. These are our life journeys. We come to Earth, I believe anyway, to learn particular lessons that will help our spirit grow and develop. And it seems to me most people on Earth came to learn that they are really astonishing spiritual beings, and they are absolute love. It's just keeping our human personality and ego out of the way that keeps interfering. But then we're human, and that's our journey. So I like to describe it as being split a human being in two. The front part is the astonishing spiritual being that you really are. And on the back are warts. And all the warts are the little things that make us human, and they're the things we have to deal with in life. Well, the easiest way to describe how you feel about yourself being the most important thing in life is to recall a time when you've been in love. And if you haven't, think of a movie. But when you're in love, life is fabulous. It's wonderful, especially in the early days. Everything is better. You crash your car. Oh, well, never mind. You know, you break your ankle. Oh, well, never mind. It doesn't matter what it is, because you just feel wonderful. And people think it's because they're in love with someone else and someone else is in love with them. Well, it's not so, in my opinion. It's because that feels so good, because what's happening is that someone else is seeing you as you really are, that astonishing spiritual being. And you're seeing them that way. And the person that falls in love with you is actually you. You fall in love with yourself at that time. And that's why life is so fabulous. And then what happens is that after about 12 to 18 months, and we know that this is a, you know, clinically proven, after about 12 to 18 months, one or the other turns around. And then they go, ew, look at those warts. And the other goes, ew, you've got warts too. And then our own warts again. And we fall out of love with ourselves, and then life goes back to being miserable or challenging or difficult, all those sorts of things. And so really it's almost time, gosh. But it really is kind of full circle what we've been talking about, starting off with gratitude for everything we have, and looking around us and focusing on what's going right, and thinking about the secrets of joy, compassion, hope, reverence, generosity, forgiveness, energy and vitality, listening, laughter, love, cheerful enthusiasm and inner peace in the context of, well, how can I have those? Well, the core of that is to fark, is to focus on those fears and get rid of them, and or at least minimize them or challenge them or even become aware of them. And then when you hear them going round and round in those thoughts in your head, stopping them and replacing them with much more truthful statements, and then finishing up with working towards learning to love yourself, and really just being at peace. That's why equanimity or inner peace is the last chapter, because as I was writing it, I realized all the other chapters, once you've kind of mastered them or got a hold of them, they fall into equanimity, and you get this wonderful sense of peace, because joy isn't being hysterical all the time, jumping around laughing. Joy is an entire range of feelings, not just emotions. Feelings are the deep knowing that you have in your heart. So it is that true inner peace, that sense of knowing everything is as it should be, that sense of being able to change things if you want to, and then stepping out on that journey.
Yes.
So they're all tied in really well to get you to a place where you feel comfortable with who you are, if not loving who you are, and you're grateful for everything that's going on, and you have a sense of no matter what goes on, there's some purpose to it, and you'll be able to find it.
Yes, because I think a lot of people sometimes struggle with rejection. I think rejection is just another way of showing how we truly feel about ourselves, and that we do need to find, that pathway back to love again. And, you know, through smiling or just taking that deep breath in, because a lot of people forget to breathe sometimes. They just hold it all in and they pull their shoulders back and face another day. And sometimes it can become such a chore. And that's why I always think it's so good to learn, you know, what you're passionate about, what it is that you love, the things that make you light up inside and smile, to not forget those, not get so caught up in the headspace with too much thinking and overthinking, and remember to be like that child inside with that wonder and that joy that we can have in just learning something new or meeting a new friend or going out and seeing something. It's really embracing life. And, you know, I think what you're doing here, Amanda, because you've also got the Joy U learning program, which is kind of,
Mary Lou, that's similar to the School of Joy, because the School of Joy is a document we send out to clients where I've spoken. But, you know, if somebody wants it, they can email me or connect with me via my website, amanda@amandagore.com is the email, and amandagore.com is the website. And I'm in the process of writing another one called Joy from the Inside Out and the Outside In. And they're just freebies. I'm happy to share them with you. But I just had to finish Joy from the Inside Out and the Outside In. But one of the things that resonated with what you were saying as another technique that we can actually give the listeners is one thing my mum, who helped me write the book, taught me is to drop to your heart, because most of the thinking that goes on really rabbits around in your brain and in those old neural pathways. And yes, it's stored in the cellular memory with your beliefs, but it can be changed. Yes. The easiest way to change it is to drop to your heart. And so imagine there's a little chute, like a little laundry chute, going from the middle of your brain down to the middle of your heart, and that you are a teeny-weeny little version of you, and even the little child that you were, and you jump in the top of the chute and you slide gleefully down and land in the enormous, vast beauty of the interior of the heart. And don't think of the heart as a, you know, blob of muscle, because that's not going to be very pretty, it'll be all murky. But if you imagine you're going into the heart chakra or the heart energy, it's the most glorious thing. The first time I ever did this was with a man called Robert Sardello. He and his wife Cheryl run the School of Spiritual Psychology in the USA, and they're wonderful courses to do. And I don't do things like this very often. I find it difficult to visualize. I know I do, but I find it difficult to see it. But I did this exercise somewhat skeptically, and I was amazed at how when I actually got into the center of my heart space, my heart chakra, whatever you want to call it, it was enormous and vast and incredibly peaceful, and gosh, it was just amazing. And many people who've done the online course or read the book have said to me they've had similar experiences where they immediately calm down when they're in their hearts. So there's a practical strategy for you, folks. When you're feeling stressed and you stop breathing and you're not coping very well, just jump in that little laundry chute and sail gracefully down into the center of your heart and take a few seconds or a minute to just center yourself in your heart, and then come out and you'll be able to listen better and you'll feel better and you'll be able to serve others. Because my mum told me that the fast track to joy is to connect to God, and for you can insert whatever you like, source, universe, divine, Buddha, Allah, love, but connect to that. For me, it's God in a spiritual sense. And the second part is to serve others. So in a nutshell, that's how the fast track to joy: connect to your higher self and or the Christ within, and serve others.
And oh, that's beautiful, like, Amanda.
Mary Lou, our time is up for tonight.
Oh.
This afternoon, in your case.
Oh, it's so lovely to have you, Amanda. And so everybody can find you on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. You're on Instagram, Pinterest. Just Google Amanda Gore and you will find all her links. Amanda Gore, thank you so much for being this beautiful, joyful beacon of light and love that you are, changing the face of the world with the amazing demonstrations, presentations, and everything that you bring to us. And all the best with your new book, and we look forward to seeing more of that and more about you in the coming months. And
and my face.
Yes, and the change in your face. So we got to watch that. We'll bring that up. I'll post it on Facebook. Thanks, Amanda.
Thank you very
lovely
much,
to
Mary.
Talk to you.
Thank you.
So
Thanks,
interesting.
Amanda.
Oh, what a joy to hear that. Mary Lou, and I don't know if you have time afterwards, Mary Lou, but I'd love to Skype with you just on just for like 2 or 3 minutes after the show if we have a chance to do that. What a great interview you had with Amanda Gore. So everybody, if you're listening
fantastic.
On West Star Radio Network, please go check out amandagore.com and take a look at how you can get involved in the Joy Project. And Mary Lou, we're going to have you back sometime soon. We've got a bunch of shows that you've got arranged with me for all kinds of fascinating guests throughout the month of August and September. So I can't wait for that. Everybody else, we're going to see you live tomorrow with Hollywood director, writer, and producer Rick Karatas. And then also everybody's favorite, Madonna impersonator, Cher impersonator, Nadia Ginsberg, comedian, who is appearing on July 21st at Casita del Campo here in Hollywood. You can go to her YouTube channel and check her out under the Madonna Logs. And we will see you live on Thursday, our Thursday, Mary Lou's Friday. Have a great day,
everybody. You've been listening to Rated G Radio.